Hello, you're now listening to The Mothership with me, Josie Booth, for Radio Reverb. This month's episode is centred around the final stages before you give birth. All the gory details in this one. We've got vagina balloons, we've got mucus plugs, we've got all the things that I never knew about before I gave birth and then subsequently had to share with all my non-pregnant friends, or indeed pregnant friends who haven't actually got to that stage yet. So yes, it is here for you in all its beautiful detail. So we have our lovely resident doctor coming to share his skills, and we also have the lovely Liz, who is our NCT guru, who's going to be talking us through everything you need to know in the final few weeks running up to your birth. So up for that interview now.
Hi Liz, thanks for coming to have a chat with us today. So you host a local NCT class for ladies in Brighton, is that correct?
That's right, yeah.
And NCT isn't a compulsory course, is it?
No, not at all. So the NCT is it's a national organisation. It's actually a charity. It's the National Childbirth Trust, and it runs all over the country supporting parents right from pregnancy through to early parenthood. It's broken up into loads of branches. So the one that I represent is our local Brighton and Hove branch. Within that, there's a whole volunteer sector which run all sorts of events and fundraisers and all sorts of lovely fun stuff for parents. And obviously then we teach the courses, and there's a few of us teachers locally.
Fab. And you've kindly offered to impart some of your knowledge for our final stages special. So I guess kicking off right at the beginning of those final few weeks, hopefully ladies have given themselves a bit of time off work before the baby's due. How would you recommend that they spend their time in that last few weeks?
Honestly,
yeah,
chilling out as much as you possibly can. Obviously, that depends on whether it's your first baby or subsequent babies.
Yeah.
There's considerably less time to chill out if you already have a child.
Yeah, of course. But
just enjoy yourself. Put your feet up if you can. Do some gentle pottering. Go and see some friends. Hang out with your partner. Do all the nice stuff that you really, really enjoy doing, and nurture yourself before, you know,
impending doom.
I wouldn't put it like that, but before life changes.
I have to say I've really enjoyed my time in between. I kind of thought I might get a bit bored and I might be strapped of things to do. But for me, it was a lovely break and time to kind of readjust my mind into moving into the new chapter, really. So it's kind of doing a bit of jobs, a bit of seeing mates, a bit of everything. So moving on to the early signs of labour. What should women look out for?
So any changes, really, anything that's new that you haven't noticed before. So things like lower backache, kind of period pain, crampy. That's the one that everybody always knows about. Some loose stools, bowel movements, possibly.
Glamorous.
Oh, yes, it just gets more and more glamorous. And my own personal favourite, which is known as the show, or indeed the bloody show.
Okay, yes.
Which is a rather charming mucus plug.
Now, a lot of people don't know about that.
Yeah.
I was saying to you, like, I've told a few friends about that, and they are genuinely horrified. And they said, Josie, tell us anything else that we never knew about, because what is this mucus plug you speak of? So, yeah.
It's the great unspoken, because, again, it isn't terribly glamorous.
Yeah.
So the mucus plug sits at the opening of the womb and in the cervix, and it's basically a barrier to infection whilst you're pregnant.
Right. Okay.
And as soon as things start shifting in late pregnancy, before you go into labour, it gets dislodged, and it's either very, very obvious and in a rather sexy fashion ends up in your knickers and you see it there.
Glam.
Oh yeah. Or some women don't notice it at all, or it comes away in bits. Sometimes it doesn't actually come away at all until a woman goes into labour. So it's not always obvious.
Yeah.
It may or may not happen. But if it does, don't be alarmed. It just means that things are shifting and things are completely normal and fine. And that's what we like to see, actually.
Yeah. And I've heard about kind of nesting. Is that really a thing?
Yep. It's so gorgeous.
Yeah. So what does that consist of?
So it's a bit of a hormonal flurry, shall we say.
Okay.
towards the end of pregnancy. And again, it doesn't happen all the time, but sometimes women get this sudden burst of energy and they just feel this uncontrollable urge to feather their nest.
Wow.
So it's things like getting up in the middle of the night to bake, but actually the oven needs cleaning first, so they give it a fantastic scrub before they even start. But what I always say is, you know, particularly partners, if anyone's listening, if you notice her doing that and it's out of character, you might want to think, is this a possible sign? And again, it doesn't mean that things are going to happen in the next day, but it could do. But it also could mean that labour's a few days away, or it's just a general kind of settling in.
Preparing. And in terms of waters breaking, again, this is something that I was kind of in the dark about. Would you expect it to be like a big gush explosion?
It's like what you see in the movies.
Yeah, or is it just a little trickle? Or like, how would you even know? And does it definitely happen for women?
Okay, so this is another one, you know, when you see it portrayed in the media, it's like this almighty, like Niagara Falls, whoosh, and off we go, and suddenly contractions are happening. It's very often actually not like that.
Okay.
Sometimes it's very obvious, women notice it, there's no doubt at all. Other times they're not quite sure if they might have just wet themselves.
Right, okay.
Again, charming.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a little trickle. Most of the time, actually, labour will start, contractions will start before waters go.
Right, okay.
And at some point throughout labour, the waters will go and then everything will intensify a little bit. Of course, sometimes waters do go before labour starts. And at that point, women are advised to keep a very close eye on their own health, babies' movements, to keep an eye on their well-being. Look out for any signs of infection, because, again, the membranes that hold the bag of waters in, or the membranes is the bag, if you like.
Right, okay.
That's another barrier to infection. So once the waters have gone, potentially there is an increased risk of infection. So for that reason, the recommendation is that women are induced for labour 24 hours or at least come in for a chat about induction of labour 24 hours after their waters have broken, if nothing has happened.
A bit of a specific question for you, but it's something that sprung to mind with me the other day. If you were having a bath because you were getting maybe some slight aches and pains in early labour, would you know if your waters broke when you were in the bath? Like, would you feel it, or would you physically, the main sign of the waters breaking is the water?
Sometimes it's very obvious, and some women actually report feeling like a little pop.
Right.
But again, everyone's really different, so it might not be very obvious.
Yeah.
Another thing to look out for is the colour of the waters. So if waters go in the bath and it looks a funny colour, that might be very obvious.
Yeah.
But again, this is a really important one because the amniotic fluid should be nice and clear, kind of almost straw-coloured. Sometimes it's a bit pinky, that's fine, completely fine. But what you don't want, really, is green or brown.
Okay. They're the danger colours.
Well, it's not necessarily danger. It might not be a huge emergency, but it just means that if the water's green or brown, that is meconium.
Right.
In the water, and that's baby's first poo.
Right.
Now, if baby's pooed in the womb, you're advised to come in for monitoring, just to make sure that baby's okay, because it can be a sign that they're not terribly happy and that perhaps they need to be born a bit sooner rather than later. So the bottom line is, if your waters go, you notice it, it's green or brown.
Yeah.
Call the number on the front of your notes,
which
will be triage in hospital, and they will ask you to come in and just come in for monitoring, check on everybody's well-being, and make a plan from there.
Fab. Amazing. That's very, very useful because, there's lots of little telltale signs, isn't there? So that first stage of labour, once you've kind of had your waters break or you've had some contractions or a show, are you essentially in first stage of labour then? Or it's kind of the early stage?
They're early signs, when contractions start, they tend to be slightly all over the place.
Right.
The thing is that no woman's body is a textbook. So nobody can say to women, it's going to unfold like this or like that, it's going to follow this pattern. We know that it follows a general trend, but within that, everyone's different. Right. So most of the time, contractions will start quite mild, quite bearable, a little bit all over the place, not much pattern to them. And that really is the very early stages of labour. From then, everyone's different again, so it might progress at different rates.
First
pregnancies, first babies tend to take a little while longer. Subsequent babies, we know, tend to be born a little bit quicker. But what you'd expect is to see the contractions gradually increasing in intensity.
Right.
The gaps between them are shorter.
Okay.
And they're lasting a little bit longer.
And so in this kind of early stage, you're at home, are you still doing day-to-day activities? Are you...
Yeah, definitely. As long as everything's fine and you're not in the hospital or anywhere else for any other reason...
Yeah.
We're assuming everything's going really beautifully. Above all, keep it normal.
Yeah.
So if things start at breakfast time, have breakfast.
Right.
And if you would normally be walking the dog and you notice a few contractions, well, great, carry on walking the dog.
So the key is to kind of almost carry on as normal as long as you can to avoid, having to, or maybe starting to think about wanting to go to hospital, which is always a bit of a... unknown in terms of when you should go, but there's a set time that you should think about that, isn't there?
Yeah, and sometimes again that's completely obvious, but in those early stages really you just want to make sure that you're pottering, you're doing what you would normally do, try and ignore it if you can, and just enjoy it, because you don't get that time again. It's a pretty special time. And if you're with your partner, you can just do so loads of nice, lovey stuff and feather your nest that little bit more, have some delicious food. But try and rest as well, because you want to maintain some energy.
Some strength. So you do hear a lot about oxytocin in pregnancy.
Oh, yes.
So can you explain to our listeners what this actually is and why it's important, especially for this stage of labour?
Okay, so oxytocin is a hormone and we all can make it, but it's a fairly shy hormone. So the body will only produce it when we're feeling comfortable, secure, safe, confident, loved. It's known as the hormone of love, actually.
Yeah.
But obviously, if somebody feels scared or anxious or observed or anything like that, then it tends to disappear a little bit, which is why it's called a shy hormone. It's a particularly great hormone for labour because it's the one that helps. It's part of a cocktail, if you like, but its role in amongst other things is to help the uterus to contract. So if a woman is feeling really safe and nurtured and loved and well supported, her environment is nice and cosy, which is why the nesting bit's quite important.
Yeah.
Then oxytocin will be produced by the bucket load,
right?
And labour hopefully will then progress really smoothly.
So the key is kind of accelerate the oxytocin and maybe decrease adrenaline.
Yeah.
So stuff that you touched upon previously with us was thinking about kind of lighting and music and just all, you know, nice images that can help amplify that.
Yeah, I mean, if you imagine your perfect, cosy, romantic night in.
Yeah.
That's basically what you're looking for, to recreate that sort of an environment. So hopefully you can relax into it, you can produce loads of lovely oxytocin, and you can just really enjoy those early stages of labour.
Lovely. Wow, feel the love.
Oh, yeah.
Liz, before that tune, you were talking about the first stage of labour. That's known as the latent stage, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So how do you know that you've progressed to the next active stage of labour, like when it's time to maybe go into the hospital?
Okay. So, you know, I was saying how contractions will get stronger.
Yeah.
They will be coming more frequently and they'll last longer.
Yeah.
So the pattern that you're looking for is really nice and strong, really productive, really, really regular. And really the magic number is 3 and 10.
Okay.
So that is 3 contractions in 10 minutes.
Right.
That's what it starts becoming more significant, if you like, in terms of active labour. So again, that's not a golden rule. A lot of women are very different to this, but this is the general broad pattern. So when a woman's been contracting really regularly, every 3 minutes or so, for a little while, then that's really the moment to make that call.
Okay.
Obviously, you can call triage, you can call the number on the front of your notes any time that you like,
sure,
for reassurance.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
absolutely fine.
Okay.
But really, if you haven't called them yet, then that's when you want to make that call.
And do they have to last a certain amount of time?
Well, we're looking for around a minute or so.
Yeah.
So, but it's not an exact science. So
yeah,
whenever you feel like you need to be with a midwife, it's totally fine to make that call.
Okay.
The thing is that the research is pretty sound, and it suggests that women will generally labour better at home if everything's fine rather than in the hospital.
Yeah.
So saying, you know, delay, 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 don't go into hospital too soon, well, that's not anyone being mean or undermining or anything like that. It's purely that we don't want anybody going to hospital too early and then effectively being sent home.
Yeah, and that is something that that does happen, isn't it?
Occasionally.
Yeah. So if there was the space, would they allow women to come in if they were like 2 or 3 centimetres dilated, or is it just down to kind of whoever you're dealing with at the time?
It's not necessarily who you're dealing with. I think it depends on your circumstances.
Yeah.
Occasionally, if it's possible and a woman feels really strongly about not going home, it may be possible to accommodate her in the triage section.
Right.
If she's not in established labour, she won't be able to go up to the labour ward under normal circumstances.
Right.
So it may be a question of sort of staying on hospital grounds or wandering around if it's during the day, having a bimble down to the seafront, something like that. There is a waiting room in triage, but obviously that's not terribly private.
Yeah, sure.
Which is why we would always suggest that you make the phone call first before even thinking about going into hospital, if
yeah,
that's what you're planning on doing.
Yeah.
Because the midwives can then advise you as to what the best course of action is.
Okay.
But of course, if you're planning a home birth,
happy days.
Yeah. Then that's also a possibility. You should also make that call at 3 and 10, you know, 3 contractions in 10 minutes. Again, earlier if you felt like you needed to. But if you feel like you need a midwife to come out to you, then that's really the time to call them.
Okay,
And then a community midwife will be on her merry way.
There you go. By this stage, most women will have had some thought about what type of birth that they kind of think about opting for. Are there specific more popular options in Brighton?
Popular options? What, as in water birth? Or
yeah.
Possibly. The rate of, or the number of women wanting a water birth is pretty high.
Is it increasing as well with more?
Yeah. Yeah, as it's becoming more well known, I think, that it's an option. We've got one of the highest percentages of home birth nationally, which is interesting. So if you want to, I don't know whether you can consider that the more holistic route necessarily, plenty of hospital births are holistic too.
Yeah.
But yeah, possibly there's a slight different trend to the rest of the country.
And just specifically in Sussex, there's a few birthing pools in the hospital as well, isn't there?
Yeah.
So there's the option to go down that route if you still wanted medical options or, you know, tools on hand.
Oh, definitely, definitely, yeah. If you're planning a birth at hospital and you still want to use a birth pool, that's absolutely a possibility.
And it's something that you can just kind of, you don't have to book anything in advance, you can just arrive and then tell them your preferred method of birthing.
Yeah, that's it. And if you've already written it in your plan, in your notes, then the midwives will have a read of that as well, and then everyone will be on the same page.
Right, sure. So there's a bit of anxiety around assisted births and maybe the use of forceps or ventouse. Would you say that these measures generally are quite harmless to the baby? Or is it just...
I mean, the thing is, nobody would be suggesting any methods of intervention that weren't soundly researched. And it's a question of balance, really. So if a baby needs to be born a little bit quicker or perhaps just needs a little bit of assistance right at the end, then on balance it's probably safer to have a doctor delivering a baby safely with instruments if necessary. Of course, everybody hopes that they won't need that, but ultimately obstetric technology does save lives. But you know, if everything's fine, then leave well alone.
Yeah, sure. So that's kind of a last option as and when, you know, you come to that, I guess.
Yeah, and that'll be discussed anyway at the time. If it's happening, the doctors will make it very clear what we need to do, why we need to do it. Are you happy to go ahead?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so say you're going for a run-of-the-mill natural birth. Are there specific positions that might aid delivery better than others?
Oh, yes.
So, what are we talking? Because in films and any media you see, it's the woman lying back with the legs and stirrups and...
Stranded beetle, as I like to call it.
sounds about right.
If it's possible, then the absolute best positions are, if you think of UFO.
UFO?
Yeah. Okay. Upright, forwards, and open.
Okay.
Basically, any position which is going to help you because you've got gravity on your side.
Sure.
So upright. Facing forwards so that you're helping your baby literally kind of corkscrew their way out. That's what they need to do.
Right.
Because the baby will need to turn during labour, as in sideways, not...
Not flip over.
Yeah.
we don't want cartwheels at this stage.
No. And open, obviously, because you want to be making loads of space in your pelvis. So
sure.
Things like leaning forwards onto a birth ball.
Yeah.
All fours, leaning over a bed, squatting if your legs are strong enough.
Yeah.
Squatting with support is a really lovely
what
one.
About just standing up?
Yeah. Standing up, dancing. Figures
wow.
of eight,
wow.
belly dancing.
I never knew there were so many options.
Oh, yeah. Just if you could possibly avoid it, not flat on your back.
Right, so actually the one image you often see of ladies on their back, it's kind of the one you should probably more avoid.
Yeah, you want to be taking an active role in your own experience, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So something that I was completely unaware of, just when you think you've smashed it and your baby has arrived safely, there's then a third stage of labour, isn't there?
The amazing placenta.
Yeah. I mean, gosh, and do you know what? Recently I've seen some pictures of placentas and they've traumatised me a little bit.
But it's an incredible piece of kit.
It is, yeah. I mean, it definitely does a good job.
Yeah.
But it's still a bit weird looking.
So if you've never seen one before, they do look a little... I'm not even sure how to describe it. It's not something that you're necessarily accustomed to seeing.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's essentially been your baby's life support machine whilst they've been inside you. So,
yeah. Give it some love.
Oh, yeah. A humble placenta.
Yeah.
But I think people often see it as the slightly annoying bit to think about afterwards, as in... You know, I've had my baby, great, lovely, lovely, lovely. What, you mean I've got to push again and get something out of me again?
Yeah.
I'm often saying, you know, if we try and shift the parameters so that we think of birth as not being complete until the placenta's out, then it becomes less of an annoying afterthought.
Yeah.
It's actually part and parcel of the whole experience.
It's a whole phase of its own.
The third stage.
Yeah.
So, yeah, your baby's in your arms, hopefully, as long as everything's fine. And then at some point over the next 10 minutes, 15, 20 minutes, up to an hour, really, then we would expect to see the placenta.
And if it wasn't coming naturally, there is an injection that you can be given, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. And again, that would be discussed at the time.
Yeah.
If you feel strongly about having it or not having it, you can have those conversations with the midwives at the time.
Yeah.
But that's known as the third stage.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but there is discussions about cord clamping.
Mm.
What's the benefit of that?
So basically after the baby's born, at some point the cord will need to be clamped and then cut, and then that's what turns into baby's belly button.
Mm-hmm.
And the umbilical cord, for those that don't know, is the bit that links the baby to the placenta.
Yeah.
So the research has shown that if we can delay that a little bit and allow the flow of blood from mum to baby to continue for a few minutes, then baby's iron levels will be higher.
Oh, okay.
So there's less risk of anemia. So it's worth doing if it's possible.
Mm.
Occasionally a cord will need to be clamped a bit quicker if baby needs a bit of help or anything like that. But again, if everything's fine, then you can enjoy lovely skin-to-skin time with baby when he or she is born, and only at some point afterwards when the cord has stopped pulsing, so you'll know that there's no more blood in it
right
coming through from mum to baby, then it's completely safe to cut it. there's no nerves in the cord, so it won't hurt the baby at all. And then obviously the placenta is doing whatever it's doing. So maybe it's already appeared, or maybe we're still waiting for it.
Right. Okay. So that's up to the lady to decide how, you know, and when she wants that kind of released, or if she's going to push it out, or if she's going to get the injection.
Yeah.
Liz, thanks so much for sharing your knowledge with us.
Pleasure.
We've just smashed the whole of labour and childbirth in an interview.
Easy as that.
There you go. It sounds so simple. For ladies listening who are keen to come and maybe get involved with an NCT session, do you have it? Is there any contact details?
So if you look up NCT, as in National Childbirth Trust, online, and if you can just basically enter your location when it asks you to look for a local course,
and
then it'll come up with a whole list of courses. There's plenty running in Brighton and in Hove really regularly. They take different formats, so some are weekend courses, which are more intensive. Some are 5 or 6 consecutive, you know, Wednesday evenings or Monday evenings or something like that. So it's up to you. You can choose whichever format suits you best.
Fab. Amazing. And you're also a local doula, aren't you?
I am.
What does that actually consist of? I'd never heard of one previously.
A doula. So it's a Greek word and it means handmaiden.
Right.
So we are trained and experienced in supporting women and their partners, if there is a partner, of course, throughout pregnancy and childbirth and beyond. We're not clinically trained necessarily, although some of us are as well. But the emphasis is on support, advocacy, nurturing, fostering a relationship before you have your baby, so that you know that you have somebody with you continuously who you already know and who you feel comfortable with.
Amazing.
But we're not there to do clinical checks or anything like that.
So it's just kind of more of an emotional hands-on support.
Yeah.
Fab. Well, if somebody loves the sound of you, because you just know so much stuff, how could they get in touch with you specifically if it's, you know, to receive your support?
My support. So I've got a website, which is free to be. So if you have a look online, either you can Google it, actually, free to be doula in Brighton, or it's free to be hyphen, I can't remember, you're gonna have to
just something. Free to be, Google that, you'll get there, you'll find it. But it's the lovely Liz, how do you pronounce your surname?
Oh, it's a silly surname, Huffam,
but it's spelled H-O-U, isn't it?
H-O-U-G-H-A-M.
There you go, that's Liz for you. She's all seeing, all knowing, everything there is to know about babies. So yeah, get in touch. Again, thank you.
Pleasure.
Great. Cheers. Bye.
Thanks to Liz from local Brighton NCT group for imparting her baby wisdom with us. If you are liking what you're hearing, then do get in touch. You can drop me a line via the Radio Reverb website. You can also go to our Facebook page, simply titled The Mothership. So I've now got our resident GP in the house.
Come in.
Dr. Tristan, how are you today?
I'm very good, Josie. Thanks for having me back on the show.
No, thank you for coming. This month we are looking at the final stages of pregnancy and hoping you might help us address some fears of our listeners and how they can overcome these.
I'll certainly do my best.
Fabulous. So firstly, not getting into hospital in time. That's a fear that I've been sent in by one of our listeners.
Well, if it's your first pregnancy, you should have plenty of time to get ready in the first week. Before labour, you may get various hints that labour is approaching. This could be an increased discharge, or losing your mucus plug, urgency to go to the toilet, and sometimes some backache. So some people almost also feel something called Braxton Hicks contractions.
Okay, well, what's a Braxton Hicks?
These are sometimes called false contractions. They can occur for several months prior to delivery. And some have felt as a brief tightening for 1 to 2 minutes, which may feel a bit like cramp.
They will definitely recognise it when it happens as something they haven't felt before. It's a new
sensation. It will feel
sensation.
A bit like a period, but it will feel different to a period. So you should have a reasonable idea what's that it's something new is happening.
Okay, fab. And I guess in terms of just getting prepped and not getting to hospital in time, would you advise women to try and have a bit of time off between finishing work and
their due date, just to give themselves time to mentally prepare. And
I think so. I think it's a good idea to have a bit of separation between work and just mentally get yourself ready for the big event. And also, if you're working right up until the time you're going to give birth, then there'd be lots of stress hormones, and as we all know, that stress hormones, you don't want those, basically, to make sure you have a nice labour.
Fab. Now, another question I was sent in is there anything that I can do to influence the position of my baby? If it's in the wrong place, it can slightly delay and hinder labour, can't it?
Yeah, there's a certain number of positions that the baby can lie in which can cause some difficulties in labour. Basically you want the baby head down, obviously, and over to the left side if possible.
Why is the left side relevant?
So that's all to do with when the baby's coming down through its birth canal, so it undergoes a few turns to make sure it comes out in the easiest way possible. And if it's over on the left, then that's the most efficient or the quickest, easiest way for it to do those turns. There's a lot of anecdotes over there about what positions you can sit in, but I think the general consensus is after about 36 weeks to avoid slouching back in sofas and chairs. So just to add to your discomfort, so sit bolt upright.
So the last thing that you want to do when you're in your final stages of pregnancy is have to kind of sit upright and not be comfortable and slouch.
Just to put the icing on the cake.
Yeah, okay. Exercise balls, do they aid with that?
Yeah, as long as you've got them the right height, then a birthing ball or an exercise ball is a good thing to sit on, definitely.
Fab. So the lovely Chloe sent in a fear of hers that she was facing, which was tearing. Is there anything that can be done to kind of prevent that in the run-up to birth?
There's a few things. I think this is probably every woman's worst nightmare when it comes to giving birth. So there is a couple of measures you can take to help reduce the chances. I can't promise anything, but yeah. There's perineal massage.
Sounds glamorous.
You'll have to look that one up yourself. I'm not sure if I can explain that on the radio at this time of day. And there's also an inflatable balloon, which may reduce the need for extra help during labour and tears.
Dare I ask what said inflatable balloon involves?
It's pretty much what it says on the tin. It's a balloon that you pump up
inside yourself
right. Over a period of weeks to increase the size. It comes with a little chart you can measure your progress on. The idea is to get it up to about 10 centimetres.
Wow.
10 centimetres about the size of the baby's head.
Oh my gosh. And so is this quite a commonly used product?
It's a fairly new one on me. It's not recommended currently by NCT or the NHS guidelines, but there is some studies out there to show that it does have some benefits, and they haven't found much harm with it. So
right.
It's one of those things you'll have to decide for yourself.
That's a kind of a more personal choice for aiding, preventing of tearing there. So what about pelvic floor?
Yes, definitely. That is one that everyone should be doing. The pelvic floor muscles help, as I mentioned earlier, about the baby turning around in the birth canal as it's coming out, and so those muscles are thought to help assist that process. And particularly after you give birth, pelvic floor muscles will help you have a much faster recovery.
Fab. And I guess that's something that I think women should probably be doing all the time, shouldn't they?
As a sort of lifelong hobby, it's put you in good stead for the future.
One thing that certainly struck me, and it's I'm sure something that every woman can relate with, is just the pain of childbirth. Is something that, you know, it's completely unknown, and everybody talks about how it's the worst pain you've ever experienced, but
everyone's got different pain thresholds, right? So what are we talking?
I think it is a life-changing pain.
Tell it like it is, doctor.
I would say. But it's pain is in the eye of the beholder. It's a different experience for everyone who does it. It's probably best to group pain relief options into medical and non-medical.
Okay.
Non-medical options, water births. There's a lot of meditation techniques, lots of different sources for that you can learn.
And actually breathing, I've heard, is...
Breathing through, definitely, yes. So it's all about getting your mind into the right state to give birth. And lots of women find that just being mentally prepared reduces their need for a lot of, you know, extra medical painkillers during their labour.
And that's something, as a medical professional, you would totally support? Is
completely, yes. There's a lot of good evidence, and, you know, the least intervention medically that we give, you know, unnecessarily, the better. However, you know, pain is a distressing experience, and some people don't tolerate pain as better as others, so...
But also, I guess, you know, not everybody has these 36-hour, gruellingly painful labours, do they? You know, some people trying to kind of, you know, encourage our ladies that are listening to feel positive about it. You know, some women do have shorter labours and might not go through as much pain.
They do, yes, certainly. You can, you know, you can get away with minimal painkillers as long as you're focused. And yes, like I said, birth is unpredictable. Some people will have nice... short painless ones, and it's a different story for other people.
So for those that maybe do have a small pain for their labour, what are some more serious options?
That really depends on where you've decided to have your birth. So if you're going to be at home, then you can use you can have a water birth at home. You can rent a big tub. You can use the gas and air at home, which is very effective for breathing through contractions. It's a short-lasting painkiller. And then there's pethidine, so if that might be available to you, which is quite a strong painkiller injection, that can leave you feeling a bit out of it. Mm-hmm. Some people enjoy that, other people find it quite unpleasant.
Well, I guess it's good that ladies, you know, have a think about this sort of stuff and these options before.
Definitely consider where you want to have birth.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the limit if you're going to have a home birth. So when you get to hospital, you could have an epidural. There's a few other options as well, potentially.
Fab. So I guess moving on to problems with the baby. This is something that has been raised with one of my friends. She was really panicking because she just, yeah, you know, you've carried this thing for 9 months, and she was just nervous that when it came out there might be some issues. So how would you advise women to kind of conquer that fear?
It's best to keep positive. Your baby, your body's just carried a baby for 9 months. The fact that your body allowed it to carry a baby for 9 months means that it's a very high chance of being absolutely fine when you give birth. You'll give birth to a very healthy baby.
It's a nice way to positively end our Q&A there. Now on to our myth of the month, which we have every month with Dr. Tristan. So a lot of these are focusing on...
definitely some interesting ones this month.
They seem to be very much focusing on getting to the induction stage and actually trying to bring on labour. I think because these are just quite common myths that you hear about. So we'll start with the first, which is it true that eating dates will bring on labour?
I was sceptical initially about this, but the more I read, there does seem to be a few studies suggesting that eating dates does have positive outcomes in labour.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You have to eat quite a lot of them for quite a long time.
How long are we talking?
6 a day for 4 weeks. Oh. It doesn't speed up the speed of onset, if that makes any sense.
Right.
So you won't go into labour any quicker. But they do think it may reduce the need for assisted labour. It wasn't really statistically significant, but they are considered safe again. So
if somebody's really desperate to bring on the baby, but I'm guessing that shouldn't really be actioned until you get to that due date.
A couple of weeks before. So it won't bring on an early labour, so you should be fine.
Okay, lovely. Well, there you go, ladies. Get on those dates. Another one, which sent in pineapple.
Yes, that's another classic, I think, isn't it? It's thought to help soften the cervix, but I haven't really been able to find anything, any substantial evidence to back that one up. It's certainly not harmful, as long as you don't go crazy with it. But
how many pineapples is going crazy?
Four or five.
Wow, that's a lot of pineapple. I wonder if your wee would start smelling a pineapple.
Well, it does. It'll make your tongue hurt. It does contain a substance which sort of slightly digests your skin a little bit. So
really?
If you eat a lot of it, you'll end up with a little bit of a sore tongue.
That's interesting. Crikey, never knew that. Pineapple's toxic, eh? You heard it here first. So moving on to another one, raspberry leaf tea.
This one's supposed to give your uterus a bit of tone, but I don't think I've found any evidence for that one either, I'm afraid. Again, it's not known to be harmful, so if you like
these,
it.
These were all just sweet treats. I think it was just made up by a pregnant woman
pretty
who
much,
was like, I just want to eat sweet things.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And finally, sex. Does sex bring on labour? Because there is a lot of ladies that I've spoken with have kind of raised that one and said, oh, you've just... Have sex.
Yeah. Well, we think it does, and it's nice that it probably does.
Yeah.
This is one of the recommended techniques. Sperm does contain a substance in it which might stimulate labour, but I think the main reason for having sex is the release of the love hormone, oxytocin, through having orgasm.
Right.
And that's the female orgasm.
Yeah.
Rather than the male one.
Otherwise, men are going to get very excited. Right. Let's crack on. Fab. So sex is the one.
Sex is good, yes. Have lots of sex before your due date.
Now, I did see, speaking of sperm, while we're getting graphic here, is it accurate that when you get induced, the induction product includes bull sperm?
I'm pretty sure this is a myth, Josie.
Okay.
I'm not aware of any methods used to induce labour that contain animal products.
Right.
I think maybe perhaps
vegans might be unhappy about that.
Yeah. vegetarians and vegans can breathe a sigh of relief, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe in the earlier products might have done, but definitely not now.
Okay, lovely. And then finally, onto our final myth that was sent in by a lovely lady called Jenny. She asked, is it true that all babies come out with cone heads?
Oh. Yes, the sort of 1993 Coneheads film comes to mind in that picture. Yes, it does for some. It's just to do with the moulding of the baby's head as it comes out.
Right.
Don't worry, it will go back to normal afterwards.
Lovely. So you might have an alien head or your baby might have an alien head for a little while.
They always look a bit strange when they come out, don't worry.
Well, there you go, ladies. Thank you so much, Dr. Tristan.
My pleasure.
Dr. Tristan for you there. Gosh, what doesn't that man know, eh? So we've now come to the end of this month's show. Hope you've enjoyed listening. Don't forget to tune in next month for our How to Survive the First Few Weeks of Having a Child. Don't forget, guys, you can track me down via my Facebook page. I lied to you earlier. It's not just The Mothership. It's The Mothership Radio Reverb. So you can find me there. Come like me and give me lots of love. And you can also track us down via the Radio Reverb website. I'll see you guys next month.